Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage. I'm Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. Our guest for the evening, this year's Defense Attorney of the Year for Texas, Mr. Jeff Blackburn. And our criminal justice system is broken. That's it. It's flat out broken. The hub of this broken wheel is the mechanism of the drug war. For 88 years, we have demonized and destroyed the lives of those whom we claimed had chemical weapons so dangerous as to be a direct threat to the continuation of our society. The war of terror is the war on drugs with afterburners. Here are a few voices in support of eternal drug war. This is a soundbite from a U.S. government film circa 1952.
Hundreds and hundreds of teenage boys and girls are becoming hopeless dope addicts every year.
Deputy Director of Homeland Security, Asa Hutchinson.
I think it's very important to be honest with our young people particularly and not paint a picture of marijuana that is not honest and factually based. It may not cause the overdose deaths like heroin or cocaine, but it's just as dangerous.
U.S. Congressman Dan Burton.
But I have one question that nobody ever asks, and that's this question. What would happen if there was no profit in drugs?
President-elect Bush.
If you quit drugs, you join the fight against terror in America.
The illustrious sounds of U.S. Attorney General Ashcroft.
Let the eagle soar.
We do not recommend that anyone use any drug, legal or illegal. In fact, we highly recommend against any drug use without a doctor's recommendation. But when you dig far enough into the mechanism of this drug war, it is easy to see that the harms of prohibition are exponentially more than the harms of the drugs themselves. I have written, faxed, emailed, and called every elected official in my chain of command, from President Bush down through John Ashcroft, the drug czar, my federal and state congressman, Governor Perry, Mayor Brown, Police Chief Bradford, D.A. Rosenthal, the city council, and the sheriff have all refused to be a guest on this program in any capacity. Here are some of the voices you will hear on Cultural Baggage.
Nobel Prize winner Milton Friedman.
My main objection to the drug war is on moral grounds. I think it's a disgrace and a scandal.
Retired police officer Howard Wooldridge.
Because police officers spend hundreds of thousands of hours in Texas looking for marijuana in underneath somebody's front seat, that detracts from public safety.
Superior Court Judge James P. Gray.
As soon as people realize what's happening, I promise you they will absolutely want to stand up in unison, shake their fists, and say, we've got to repeal drug prohibition.
We do call for the regulated distribution of all drugs to informed adults. On the day we make this call, we destroy the worth of the drug lord's stash. We curtail most of the street gang violence, and we eliminate the jobs of every street corner vendor who wants to sell drugs to our children. If you disagree, it is you we want to hear from. We'll take a couple of quick calls at the end of this program. Our number is 713-526-5738. And now for a quick bit of drug war news. According to Dr. Jack Wilberger, chairman of neurosurgery at Allegheny General Hospital, and as reported by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, use of Marinol, a type of synthetic marijuana or THC, by those suffering head trauma has proven successful in reducing or in preventing altogether swelling of the brain that often cascades following such an event, leading to progressive brain cell death. THC, the main component of marijuana, counters inflammation, works as an antioxidant, and blocks the controlled influx of calcium into the cells, which can kill them. Quote, it's different from all other drugs we've tried in head injury, Wilberger said. None of the others worked, end quote. THC products can help, and the drug can be given up to 4 hours after the injury is sustained. Prior studies conducted in Israel found that 3 months after injury, 42% of the patients who took the THC had good neurological recovery compared to 17% of those taking a placebo. As the truth about this hypocritical drug war becomes more evident every day, with news of corrupt cocaine cowboys caught every week and more judges quitting the bench rather than enforce these drug laws that mimic the Inquisition of old. Please listen Monday through Saturday to the 420 Drug War News. The drug warriors are on the run, hiding from debate. I say time is up. From this day forward, those who support this failed policy, who demonize and destroy the lives of our children so they can look tough, need to be seen in the light of day for what they are. Charlatans, liars, and destroyers who all love the drug war. I'm saying that drugs can be bad, but that drug prohibition is evil. On America's Independence Day, I called a man who just a few years ago ran for governor of California and who must now spend his life as a UN refugee in Canada. Steve Cubby must now avoid the draconian laws of the USA. Hey, this is July 4th, and I'm wondering, what does America's Independence Day mean to you on this day?
Well, it used to be my favorite holiday. I was really into Independence Day, celebrating it with my friends, and I'm certainly more independent than ever, but it's not going to happen for me on American soil. Here in Canada, I'm able to grow as much cannabis as I need. I can travel with a pound and a half. I can grow 12 pounds. I can have 117 plants. I can walk down the street and know that if anyone wants to mess with me, I'll get my day in court, the judge will want to hear what I have to say, and I'll get a fair outcome.
Please tell them a little bit of the history, how you helped to craft the Prop 215, and what happened to you in California.
Well, for years the police told us, if you don't like the laws, change them. The laws were unjust, that sick people were not getting access to cannabis for AIDS and such. I was fortunate to be involved with a group that included Dennis Perrone and Ed Rosenthal and Dale Geringer, and we all worked together, and we did something really historic. I like to call it the vote heard round the world. We got the voters of California to cast more votes for medical marijuana than for Bill Clinton. And yet we saw that there was a slow-motion coup by the police. They refused to accept this law that we had passed. The legislators refused to uphold the law. The attorney general refused to enforce the law. And then ultimately we were told that the law was going to be ignored by the federal authorities. So step by step by step, we saw that everything that we had been taught about the Constitution, about the Bill of Rights, about what America is supposed to stand for, every step of the way we have been told a lie. Well, I urge everyone to come to British Columbia and experience real freedom. If you think drugs are addictive, try freedom. That is really addictive stuff.
Okay, Steve tells me that there's plenty of freedom in Canada. He says the women sunbathe topless, that when they need a pick-me-up, they can legally drink coca tea, and if they need to go on a spiritual quest, they can legally use peyote, as long as you're an adult. All right, we're going to bring in our guest for the evening. This gentleman was Lawyer of the Year for Texas. He was the main defender to free the prisoners of the Tulia drug sting. I'd like to welcome Jeff Blackburn.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on the show tonight.
Well, hello, Jeff. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, and better just by virtue of knowing that you guys are putting this kind of voice out all over the state and all over the country. It's very, very important, and it's a great privilege to be on the show.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I, you know, something I find very disturbing, that one of the gentlemen, Christopher Eugene Jackson, who was just recently released 2 weeks ago from the Tulia drug sting, has now been accused of evading arrest and punching a police officer and has a $3 million bond. Is that correct?
That's right.
It's just outrageous, sir.
Well, yes and no, but, you know, yeah, it's really a classic. It gives us a great way to look into the classic dilemma that's posed not just by these cases, but by the whole wrongheaded nature of drug policy in Texas especially, okay? A guy like Chris Jackson was a crack addict when he was accused of being a dealer by Coleman. The community in Tulia wanted to get rid of him because he was a drug addict, not because he was a dealer. So they jumped up a case on him, made it up with this crooked cop, because they needed to get rid of him. Everybody was happy, at least everybody with any power or influence or friends was happy, because they got rid of this nasty drug addict. The problem is that now that we've gotten him out, you know, Chris is still addicted to drugs. He's addicted to crack. He's still poor, and he's still black, and he's still in the middle of nowhere without any friends or money or influence. And 4 years in prison have done nothing but make him more afraid of authority, nothing but more defiant towards authority in a really self-defeating, hostile kind of way, explosive kind of way. And this is what we're going to get. You know, this very session of the legislature, Texas has spent a bunch of time deciding and determining and finally getting rid of anything even remotely resembling a treatment program in or out of the joint. There's nothing out there anymore. For people on parole, if you want treatment, if you turn yourself into the state and say, I'm on parole, I can't make it, I'm a crackhead, I need some help. I can tell you, if you're in the panhandle, that's your problem. Tough luck. You're not going anywhere. You're not going to get any help because there's no place for you to get it. There's no funding. There's no institution. There's no nothing. So Chris, in his own way, you know, on one level, we can look at it and say, oh, it's terrible and it's endangered this whole campaign. But in another, in a deeper way, for people that can think more deeply, like your listeners, it really shows us the true dimension of this bigger picture and this bigger problem. There's no help for a guy like Chris Jackson.
You're right. Jeff, if racism, you know, can exist in American jurisprudence, as with Tulia as an example, and where, you know, equal treatment is supposed to be a bedrock principle, then who's to say that this cancer is not present in other areas of American jurisprudence?
Well, it absolutely is. I mean, you know, our laws, and more important, the way that we run the law, the way that we administer the law, whether you're talking about a jury verdict or a judge's decision or who they bring in for to make a decision on a jury that day, all of that is influenced by everything all around us in this society. And, of course, we have a deeply racist society. You don't even need, you know, folks in Tulia, I've tried to explain this to people, that in many ways the white community there is so racist, they don't have any idea they're racist.
Right.
They're beyond even thinking of themselves that way. It's just the way things happen. It's the way things are done. And it's the way they think of the world. And I think that's true with a lot of white people. Not just in this state, but all over the United States. And those kind of attitudes, those deeply ingrained racist attitudes, are going to make themselves felt. That's why a white guy who gets accused of delivering a gram and a half probably is never even going to go to trial, because he's going to be offered a nice little probation deal. And a black guy like Chris Jackson is going to go to trial and get 45 years from a jury.
Yeah, it's outrageous again. Jeff, you know, along that same line, you know, I've heard it said, and I, you know, as best I know it, it is true that law enforcement admits they enforce the drug laws more against the black community because they say it's good for the black community. Is that a fair assumption?
Well, I mean, regardless of the reasons, I'll tell you why they do it. These guys are into numbers. They want to make big numbers because the bigger the numbers, the more money you get. If you can make good numbers with good arrest and convictions, and not good, just any arrest, any conviction, anything to show that you're running people through the system, you're going to get bigger grants that year, and you're going to get finer cars to drive in, and you're going to get cooler stuff and bigger guns and more ninja costumes to wear, and on and on and on. It's about the numbers. And if you want to just get really pragmatic and really empirical, because I think that's really all that most cops and even cop administrators are capable of, you know, it's not like there's a deliberate conspiracy to inject racism into the administration of drug laws in this country. There doesn't need to be. It's just easier that way. You're going to go pick on people that don't have any friends and don't have any money and aren't going to hire lawyers. And, you know, that's what Tulia is such a classic example of. But if you want to see the same thing going on, walk down to the Harris County Criminal Courthouse any day of the week and you're going to see it. You're going to see a black guy over there with a court-appointed lawyer who's probably never met him until that morning, and is going to do just the same kind of job that got done on into these poor people up here.
Yeah, you know, it seems that there should be some mechanism to curtail this and you know, the jurisprudence malfeasance that the DA and the cops pretty much just get to run rampant, and no one challenges them on their tactics or their procedures because it's public will?
I don't know. You know, I'll tell you what's really interesting about Tulia for us. What we've tried to do with Tulia is break out of the normal sort of argument that people like us and probably many of your listeners tonight would make to other people that we know, the kind of normal discussion we would have about drug policy. Break out of that and show people this is the result of numbers-driven law enforcement. Innocent people get convicted. And Tulia was useful for us as a legal symbol and as a political symbol. And I hope it will continue to be useful. And we're going to keep on making it be as useful as we can make it for as long as we can to generate some, not just thinking about what's going on here, but to begin to explain to people, and I think this is really the key, that the war on drugs is a war on civil rights, that drug law is civil rights law. These are the people that most need civil rights. Believe me, when you're criminally accused, you need civil rights and you need the Bill of Rights more than anybody else. And that drug enforcement policy in this country is the number one pressing critical civil rights issue confronting not just African Americans, not just Hispanics, but every single American that cares about the basic constitutional setup that we claim to live under here. Drug law is the cutting edge of the whole process. And what Tulia, we hope, those of us that have been working on this case for all this time, myself and Randy Credico from the William Kunstler Fund, what we hope is that through this case we can show that this is not just a drug case, this is a civil rights case. And in doing so, that every drug case in this country right now, and certainly every drug case in Texas, is a civil rights case. We've got to think differently as a people about what these prosecutions are really all about and what they do.
Yes, Jeff, you're right. It brings to mind, you know, I've seen over the last several months hundreds of letters to the editor and editorials, strong, biting editorials from papers all across Texas and even all across the nation about this Tulia situation. And about 10 days ago, the Center for Public Integrity released a report on prosecutorial misconduct. And I did a quick analysis of the database for Houston, and it showed about 75% of the cases in Houston that they studied showed prosecutorial misconduct. Your comments on that?
Oh, it's absolutely rife and rampant. But this does get me to another sort of perspective that those of us who've not only worked as lawyers in this campaign, but are also have also worked as activists and campaigners around this Tulia issue are focused on right now. The truth is, there are some things that can be done legally. There are laws that can be changed and laws that can be made that would do a lot of good in preventing this kind of situation from happening again. What I'll tell you right now, what we're really looking at focusing on is sort of capitalizing on the strength and some of the momentum that we've generated around Tulia to carry that forward to the next Texas legislature. And I'm going to be in Austin meeting with people in just a couple of weeks, people from the ACLU and other organizations, in a new effort to sort of galvanize ourselves to make this the legislative crisis of the next Texas legislative session. And there are some simple things that are about simple justice that regular people can get behind. For example, we need a public defender system in this state, period. I can tell you, if there was a real public defender system, which no matter how bad it was, would have been 1,000 times better than the court-appointed system that we suffer from now, which is a judicial patronage system where appointments are handed out to somebody that's a good toady for the judge. If we had a public defender system, what happened in Tulia wouldn't have happened. That's one point. Another point, abolish these drug task forces. They got to go. Another point, in all numbers-driven law enforcement as a technique, reestablish some degree, even an implicit degree of community control over law enforcement. Number three, we need to impose a law that says cops have to be corroborated in drug delivery cases. These aren't, you know, these legislative reforms that we're talking about are not pie in the sky, unobtainable goals. I mean, it's not like we're talking about free health care for everybody here. This can be done. We could do this if we had the will to do it. And we're going to be spending the next couple of years using TULIA and other cases like it around this state, including in Harris County, as great examples of why this has to be done. We need to establish an innocence commission in this state. It's already been proposed by Rodney Ellis from Houston. That proposal needs to be adopted, and that needs to become the law.
Well, Jeff, so far we don't have any outraged callers online. I want to ask you all out there again, if you would like to, if you have a comment or a question, please give us a call at 713-526-5738. You don't have to be outraged by what we're saying. If you have something you'd like to comment, we'll be glad to hear from you. And we're going to take just a quick little break, and we'll be coming back for your calls, 713-526-5738.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
The White House drug czar's policies ensure that marijuana dealers stay in business.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
The White House drug czar's policies ensure that teenagers have easy access to marijuana.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
There is a better way. Bring marijuana in off the streets, tax it, regulate it. Contact Houston Normal, HoustonNORML.org.
Okay, folks, we're back. We do have some callers coming in. Just a quick thought. Here they want to prosecute Chief Bradford, you know, for various and sundry reasons. And I feel there's a parallel there between what happened when they decided to go after Tom Coleman and they quit looking at Terry McEachern and Larry Stewart and Ed Self. I think we need to keep our eyes open on all these guys. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Cops love scapegoats. And if you can find one guy to single out, prosecute and appease the masses with, make him a bone that you throw to the dogs and say, hey, now look, our system works. They'll go for it every time.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff, we're going to go ahead and pick up the callers. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Dean, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt. Do you have a question or concern?
Yeah, I got a question about the way the show started. First of all, I love your show. I love the drug war news. Anyway, but just to play the devil's advocate, one of the things that I thought of is wouldn't drug dealers still have a job if they were willing to buy it as adults and sell it to children?
Well, we'd have plenty of room in prison to put them in if they did, that's for sure.
Okay. And also, I guess maybe you could have to sign something so you could only get so much weed a day so you couldn't sell enough amount to make a full-time living anyway.
Well, Jeff, I'll jump on that one, too. The point is, marijuana, 10 years from now, will be totally legal, grown wherever it wants to be, and people will do their dangest to keep it out of the hands of children. There is very little that, you know, marijuana is freely available as it is. Why not regulate it, tax it, and make use of the controls?
Sounds good, Dean. Take care.
Thank you, Matt.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. John, line two.
Well, I'm driving through town, and I found you guys on the station here. First of all, I think it's great that you guys have a program like this that gets this sort of issue out in the open. My question is for both of you guys, how can we change the moral stigma that's associated with drug prohibition? Because that seems to be the biggest stumbling block, is getting over that moral stigma of drugs are bad. And we teach kids in schools through programs like the DARE program that drugs are bad, but they don't go into the facts behind drugs. They just put that stigma on kids, and then they don't end up knowing the real facts.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, you know, the truth is that, like it or not, government is the teacher of the people. Things do start. They don't end, but they start with policy in this country. And I think that's why this show is important, and that's why we're all together, and that's why we're having this discussion, because we all know that the critical importance of law and policy in this country. So I think if we changed our policies, we can begin to change attitudes. That's really got to be the role of government. Now, that's very abstract. I want to give you a concrete example of what we're really hoping to do in TULIA. And I think this is the coolest thing that we may be able to pull off. I'm very excited about it, and I want to lay this out for the listeners to maybe stimulate a little discussion. Our next step in Tulia is not to just keep pummeling these bad guys and demanding their indictment and frankly ruining this county, which we could do if we wanted to. Our next step in Tulia is to show them some of the mistakes they've made, and we are engaged right now, unbelievably enough, in a very serious series of discussions. We being the Tulia Legal Defense Project and the William Moses Kunstler Fund, on the other hand, with Randy Credico. Credico and I are both involved in very, very in-depth discussions with the county judge, members of the county commission, the chief of police, and other establishment figures in Tulia. They have learned how wrong this drug war can be. They have learned now the hard way of the mistakes that they've made. And I believe that even these guys, you know, you can't write anybody off. And I'm not writing them off. I believe that even these guys are learning now. And it's interesting. In fact, it's great to see how this experience has begun to really eliminate their commitment to the drug war concept. What we're hoping to do, and I believe that within the next month, we're going to have a very solid announcement. Incidentally, I'm breaking this pretty much on KPFT for the first time. It's not a secret, but we have been having these very intense discussions with them.
Jeff, I have to interrupt.
Sure.
Folks, with a half-hour show, I'm so sorry. We just don't have time to get to all the callers. I thank John, Randall, Chris, Mike, and the others who've called in. We do have to go. We have a couple of more announcements to make. Please be sure and join us next week when U.S. Congressman Ron Paul will be our guest. Jeff, thank you so much, and we're out of here.
You're most welcome. Thanks.
For their work as a grand deceptor, hypocrite, lying weasel, bigot, corporate whore, baby raper, superstitious shill, or ultra sinner, Cultural Baggage is proud to present The Coward of the Week. In past weeks, we have chosen for Coward of the Week, first, Resident Bush, then John Ashcroft, and most recently, Judge Breyer, who wasted $1 million to convict pot guru Ed Rosenthal, and then sentenced him to one day in federal prison. Today, we get out the blanket, and we throw it over millions of cowards, the whole drug warrior subculture. The politicians and the police, the drug treatment cowards who steal billions each year treating marijuana users, the urine testers, the prison builders, the ministers who fleece their congregations with lies about drug use, the scientists, doctors, lawyers, and drug czars that work for the government and who make sure that the focus of any studies done on the, quote, illegal drugs are conducted to find any potential harms of said use, all the while preventing studies to discover any positive benefits to health, like today's news story that showed that THC use helps prevent brain swelling. For all their hard work at maintaining their jihad, their power base, and their $50 billion cash cow, today's award for Coward of the Week goes to the millions of lying, weasel-ass drug warriors worldwide. Be advised, your day is coming real soon. My advice, get yourself down to the river of reform and get baptized ASAP. On a positive note, if you would like to support KPFT and Cultural Baggage, how about a trip to Amsterdam? We're going to sponsor a tour of the coffee shops for KPFT, Cultural Baggage, and 420 listeners. Please let me know if you'd like to take a trip. I'll introduce you to my friend, Noel Van Schaik, who runs Willie Wartell's Sensimilla Shop. I hope you've enjoyed today's Cultural Baggage, and I hope that you'll get in touch with us. Let us know who you would like to see as guests on our show. You can reach me, Dean, at cultural-baggage.com. Dozens of our shows are stored permanently online at cultural-baggage.com as well. We hope you'll give a listen. Please be sure to join us next Tuesday at 6:30 when our guest will be Congressman Ron Paul. We'll be discussing the fact that the federal government is now acting as a bully in state and local elections, and we'll talk about the medical marijuana bill, which he has before Congress. Okay, in closing, I ask that you always remember, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so please, be careful. For my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker For Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth.